Ora, novamente, muito bom dia.
Very good morning to you once again. Let's resume our work. We're now in the second panel, which is entitled Portugal and the Convention. What still needs to be done? Obviously, I'd like to begin by extending my greetings to everybody, and in particular our panelists here. I have to say it's a great honour for me to chair this panel, and I've taken up the challenge thrown down to me by the chair of the Equality Subcommittee. I think this is an issue which unites us all, and I know that there are many people who've devoted their entire careers to this subject matter. Thus, I think it is of the utmost interest to share knowledge and points of view, even if sometimes there are disagreements. We know that violence against women is a very old problem and a universal one. I'm afraid that I'm compelled to quote Ban Ki-moon, the United Nations Secretary General. He says that violence against women is common to all communities. It's never acceptable or tolerable. In fact, according to the United Nations, over 70% of women suffer violence at some point in their lives, more often not perpetrated by husbands, relatives, or other acquaintances. This undermines communities, it prevents the social development of women individually, collectively. This is a state of affairs which can be seen throughout the world and in Portugal. It's often in a private sphere, but it's moving towards the public sphere. It's now being recognised on national and international plane. Obviously, we make the most of synergies and the new concept of rights. We're sensitive to a new language, a new paradigm, which is a paradigm of human rights. I also have to mention that the first international remarks on violence did not refer to violence against women, but it's gradually been introduced through social movements and the organisation of feminist movements. In fact, in the 1970s, women's rights were projected onto the international stage, but it's only in the 1990s that violence against women was projected onto the international stage and included in legal frameworks. We know that a great deal has been done, notably within the framework of the United Nations, and we also know that the first international convention which led to Women's Charter of Rights did not mention violence against women, but a recommendation was later added, and also it included then violence against women. In 1993, at an international conference in Vienna, wasn't 1993, but it was the United Nations Declaration to End All Forms of Discrimination Against Women was adopted. But it's not just on the international plan that we've seen progress, we've also seen it in regional, at regional levels. We know that there is a convention of Belém do Pará, which prohibits violence against women in the Inter-American area, and there's also a firm commitment from the European Union and the Council of Europe. And proof of this firm commitment is the Istanbul Convention. Previous speakers have already drawn attention to this. We are now consolidating at an international level a long path which has been trod, and we also are following our own path here in Portugal. And I think that this is what we're going to hear from the speakers in this panel, is that from a theoretical point of view, we've got a good legal framework, we've got good commitments, good intentions, but very often they are not translated into practice. So what still needs to be done? That's the question. And so I'll now give the floor to Teresa Faria, who is the president of the Portuguese Association of Women Jurists. She's an appeal court judge, and we're very pleased to be able to hear your views here this morning. Thank you very much, Teresa Anginho. Obviously, I'd like to begin by thanking the organisers for the invitation to be here today. I have to say that it's a great honour for me to take part. My analysis will be circumscribed to two issues which I believe are the most relevant ones to this panel. Before that, though, I would like to focus on the legal nature and scope of this concept. So I'd like to begin by referring to the political and legal relevance of the foreword or preamble to the convention. We've also seen in other human rights treaties the reference to the main aim of creating a political and geographical area in which women are not the victims of violence, be it public or domestic violence. And I think this is the key to the correct interpretation of the convention. So the first bedrock is that this convention should be part of the legal acquis on human rights, and thus it should be interpreted and implemented in view of all the legal doctrine and case law in the area. Thus, the interpretation and implementation of this convention will make use of all the knowledge acquired on human rights. This knowledge, both its positive and negative points, will be used so that we can learn from our mistakes. Thus, the first issue concerns how the obligations of the convention can be translated into justice. So, how can we determine and gauge the fulfilment of the requirements by the states party to the convention? This is a particularly relevant topic in view of the repeated use of the term "the states will take the necessary legislative measures to," so states can act in a discretionary fashion to fulfil the requirements of the convention. Nevertheless, if you look at the CEDAW Committee's doctrine, then the use of that expression presumes that the state will make a full survey of the supposed beneficiary of these rules, and thus this analysis will lead to the appropriate measures being proposed. The assessment of these measures will be made in light of, not of their potential to produce a change, but more specifically in view of the effects which will be obtained through their implementation. This assessment can only be done as follows. We have to use one of the concepts of human rights here. This is the legal nature and interdependence of all rights, be they civil, economic, social or cultural rights, and thus their effective application or implementation is interdependent. So there is a consensus that there are three levels. First of all, respect. Non-interference by states in all those cases and groups, all those cases where groups and individuals can meet their own needs. Secondly, protection. States must react to or prevent processes which could harm those rights, human rights. Thirdly, the duty to provide the necessary resources to those people who don't have them so that they can enjoy human rights. Nevertheless, even though these obligations differ, they have the same legal nature. That is, they must achieve results. Their translation into justice will be achieved through gauging to what extent states have fulfilled their obligations. So has the state fulfilled the obligations foreseen in this convention? I would just like to refer to two of the various issues in hand. I'd like to begin by referring to Article 6. This is gender-sensitive policies. In the convention, it says, parties shall undertake to include a gender perspective in the implementation and evaluation of the impact of the provisions of this convention and to promote and effectively implement policies of equality between women and men and the empowerment of women. I wanted to refer to this article because I believe that this provision implies that we must adapt our language to the existence of women. This means that we have to fulfil Article 5, Paragraph 2 of the Council of Ministers. This means that all legal acts must be written up in gender-sensitive language, inclusive language. This must be extended to all official communications and journalism. And the starting point for this is the National Parliament. We mustn't refer to members of parliament just in a masculine form in Portuguese, not just deputado, but deputada as well, for example. Also, in the official journal of Portugal, correct Portuguese language must be used. We mustn't think that it's only men that have Portuguese citizenship. The female gender words must be used as well, is what the speaker is trying to say. This is of legal and symbolic reference because this is how we achieve citizenship. Also, as far as language is concerned, it's also most relevant that the Council of Ministers' rules of procedure foresees that all legal documents must undergo a gender impact assessment before they're published. That should be rendered public. Also, when it comes to parental rights, we're looking at Articles 18, 26 and 31 of the Convention. This is an issue which was raised by Dulce Rocha a few moments ago. And I have to say that the Portuguese Association of Female Jurists is worried about this issue. We've put forward a proposal for legislative change. We submitted it to the Parliament. We believe that this change is necessary. It's because it's linked to the following fact. The current legal frameworks for divorce and attributing custody and parental rights do not take into consideration victims of domestic violence. And in fact, they could exacerbate domestic violence. When there is domestic violence or sexual violence against children, we use a concept which is called parental estrangement, and this has caused a lot of controversy, and it's very questionable. It's been questioned by experts. When there is joint exercise of parental rights, which is a normal case, and when there is domestic violence as a cause for divorce, violence has become worse. Violence cannot be solved through mediation, as Article 48 of the Convention states. You cannot give joint responsibility for children to a perpetrator and a victim of domestic violence. If a child has seen domestic violence, even if the child wasn't the direct victim, the child has witnessed a very serious crime. Even though a victim of domestic violence has a specific status, when it comes to divorce proceedings and custody hearings, that status cannot be used. Thus, the fundamental rights, notably individual integrity, is being violated. So people are in a very vulnerable situation. They do not exercise their rights and they feel very unsafe, unsafe for their future and for their children's future. The perpetrator has a feeling of impunity and could be tempted to commit violence again. So we see that there is a real conflict of rules. We see that the same rights are given to perpetrator and victim sometimes. In fact, in criminal proceedings, we see that there are mechanisms for defending victims, but there are coercive measures which can be used, such as barring orders, but victims in family hearings are not defended, and sometimes they're forced to live under the same roof as the perpetrator. This means that criminal proceedings are not effective. There could be room for new violence and there is serious harm to women and children which have been the victims of a crime. We see that the unity of the legal system is broken, or at least undermined. Thus, we think it is violent that a new safeguard clause be introduced in parental rights hearing. This means that joint exercise of parental rights will not be permitted when domestic violence has occurred. These are two changes to law which we have proposed, but I wanted to draw your attention to the two situations which I think are the most relevant. Many thanks for your attention.
Thank you very much for talking about these issues, and thank you for your contribution. You not only identify the problems, but you also suggest solutions. And now I give the floor to Dr. João Lázaro. He's going to talk about domestic violence. He's the chairman of APAV. Thank you. Good morning to you all. First of all, as president of the Commission of Constitutional Rights, Liberties and Guarantees of the Assembly of Republic, considering the General Prosecutor, the Chair of the Commission, Mr. President of the Commission of Quality for the Commission of Constitutional, the deputies, illustrious members of this panel, ladies and gentlemen, I am extremely pleased to participate today on behalf of the Portuguese Association of Support to Victims in this conference, Violence Against Women and the Convention of Istanbul, and I would like to thank you for inviting our association to participate. The convention is based on this hypothesis that women are affected by crime, most violent crime, which is a heritage of historical relations of power which are unequal. Among the so-called developed countries, Portugal is certainly a good example of this inequality due to attitudes from other times which still persist in the social mentality. 22 years ago, APAV has been helping the victims of crime in a confidential and free manner. And they represent about 90... These crimes account for 90% of crimes against people, and 82% of their victims are women. In 2011, 80% of the 15,724 cases registered by APAV, the victims were women. These figures are shocking and absolutely unacceptable, and they also should be force us to change our mentalities. A lot has been done already in our country. From the legislative and political point of view, important steps have been taken to fight against gender violence. It's not only that these inequalities are obvious and increasingly more serious given the economic crisis, which tries to justify abuses and restrictions. And also, the discriminatory attitude of women is still persisting in various areas of society. It's one of the main obstacles to social evolution. In terms of criminal justice, this concept was clearly condemned by a study or a survey from the Center of Social Studies from Coimbra University, signed by Madalena Duarte, which it is concluded that there is a high degree of prejudice in the judicial decisions on cases of domestic violence, and where sentences attributed to the victim have an influence on the sentencing. And this also, the balance that we need to find in these guarantees, the defense of the state and rights of the victim, is still very dim. The victim has to be also in the center of a system so that all the laws created and the measures of protection established can really be thought also in terms of their needs. The crime has an impact on society and on the economy, and also, above all, on the individual rights and the welfare of the victims. It is precisely this impact on the victim, which also entails consequences on society and for the state. A country where there is no system of supervision of the victim, of the its role in the criminal procedure, and any prevention of the crime, this also it means that the victims will also suffer from the consequences of the crime. And this change of mentalities which is brought by the Convention of Istanbul and also by the Council of Europe, and also the forthcoming directive of the European Parliament and the Council, which establishes minimal standards as to the rights, the protection of the victims of the crime by the European Union. This convention also requests an integrated approach of the theme of violence against women, imposes obligations of coordinated policy of the state, and forces also the allocations of funds to fight against domestic violence. So the same. We need to strengthen and enhance measures of protection to promote international cooperations, and also to guarantee minimal support services to the victims. The priority given to prevention and to research and systematic collection of statistical evidence in both instruments, but especially in the conventions, is extremely laudable, commendable. One of the main obstacles to the efficient combat of criminality is a lack of evidence. And also, this is particularly obvious in feminine genital mutilation, but it's not cross-cutting to all crime. We also, the dimension of prevention, also covering programs for perpetrators, which integrate the perspective of the victim, and the insertion of this dimension in school curricula involving social communication and promoting a better training of professions is absolutely vital. The directive also establishes the need of training, not also in gender dimensions, but also in victimology, to judicial and officials and police. And the police force. Another plus value is taking into consideration the need to assess the context of involving circumstances in crime of sexual violence, protecting victims, and also excluding any dependence, exclusive or the interpretation of the consent concept, and also further than the hierarchical dependence. So, we also, we're very pleased to see that the crime of stalking is still being dealt with. It is not yet recognized in Portugal as such. APAV has accompanied various victims of this crime and sees that they are still not protected. It is also with great hope that we see the team of victims being addressed in such a document. And also, it is a growing issue in Portugal. APAV has also followed recently cases of women who are not reporting the crime of domestic violence so that they are not discovered. Those are their situations of illegality are not discovered, and they are still victims of various abuses. This convention also adopts a global perspective. It's not focused only on parts of the problem, but on the whole problem. And also, there is a concern to guarantee that violence episodes are considered as in decisions of granting guard and visitation rights. This convention is also very important and brings opportunities of change and positive evolution. However, the international legal instruments have to be transposed, and also as such, they're not enough. A concerted and global policy is necessary, and as well as the involvement of the all pertinent parts. In Portugal, we'll have to go a long way to change mentalities, the social education of the problem in its real place. The victim is never a part of the problem. It is always the target of violence, which cannot be justified. The victim is able to change its own life, to regain control, and to assert itself. And also, we hope that with a more cooperation, we'll take advantage of these new opportunities and will promote an implementation of the rights of the victims. Thank you very much for your attention.
É de facto sempre prazer ouvi-lo.
Thank you very much, João Lázaro. It's always a pleasure to listen to you. I think you can clearly see that the convention is a sign of hope, and I hope that it will lead to greater work at a political level and in civil society to fight against violence and eliminate it from our country. And I'll give the floor to Maria José Magalhães, who is president of UMAR, the president of the Union of Women Alternative and Response. Very good morning. I'd like to begin by thanking the chair of the Parliamentary Subcommittee of Equality, Elsa Peixe. I would also like to extend my greetings to Mendes Botta, who I know has been one of the leading figures at the Council of Europe. I'd also like to extend my greetings to the chair of the panel, Teresa Anginho, also the appeal court judge, Teresa Feria, sitting next to me, and João Lázaro. I've got a presentation with a lot of slides. I'm speaking on behalf of my association, UMAR, also Elizabeth Basilio, who is someone who works closely with me but hasn't been able to join us here today. So I wanted to draw your attention today to a number of the situations which need to be changed here in Portugal. I'd like to start by saying that we hope that this initiative is a good omen for the speedy ratification of this convention by the Portuguese Parliament. Furthermore, as Johanna and Hillary said earlier, this convention comes in the wake of the CEDAW. I don't want to dwell too long on the data, but they have to be mentioned. We know that nearly 50% of women in the European Union state that at some point they have been victims of violence. And according to the Eurobarometer in 2011, we know that there are a large number of deaths caused by domestic violence every year. In Portugal, we normally see 3 female victims a month of domestic violence. That's deaths. We've seen 36 so far this year. So when it comes to the Istanbul Convention and the situation here in Portugal, 53% of murders in which women are the victims, and in 51% of the attempted murders, there was a background of violence which was well known by other members of the family and close neighbours. When it comes to associations like mine, and we know that there are others which are not who are not speaking up here on this panel, we know that in 11% of murders were preceded by a report to the authorities. So it wasn't just the community that knew about this background of violence. It was the authorities that knew about it. So, from the feminist movement's point of view, from the point of view of those who fight against gender-based violence, this is an issue which has to be raised. We know that there are a number of cases at European level, Hageman, White, Kelly and Homkins, which shows that there is a lack of coordination of the implementation of legislation. We know that violence has a huge human, social and economic cost. The fight against gender-based violence is the fight against those costs. In Portugal, certain studies have shown that there is a lack of coordination amongst institutions, and we see that victim support agencies are working on their own. They are not included in the judicial system, in the health system, and so on and so forth. When it comes to the Istanbul Convention, my association believes that this is the broadest ranging international treaty on women's rights, or the violation of women's rights, as Teresa Anginho mentioned. There was a convention signed in Belém do Pará for the Americas, and we didn't have something similar in Europe until now. The convention recognises that violence against women is firmly entrenched in the patriarchal society, so this convention focuses on victim protection and judicial proceedings against perpetrators. So it is an important step forward at an international level for women's rights, and it sets a framework for all states to ensure the investigation, criminal proceedings and punishment of violence perpetrated against women. So the reason why it's so important to ratify this convention is it because it may allow states to be held responsible for not undertaking appropriate victim protection and support. We must hold the state responsible. We must hold the systems responsible. This is the first international treaty which contains a definition of gender, which doesn't hide women. I believe that this is a conceptual synthesis of the debate which we have had on family violence, gender-based violence, violence against women. So, in fact, this convention uses the term gender-based violence. There are some innovative aspects. There are certain acts which have not been criminalised in many states or are not appropriately criminalised in many states. The convention covers women and girls. Here in Portugal, we know that girls have been discriminated in the issue of domestic violence. This broad-ranging definition of crimes against women also conveys the idea that violence against women is not a private issue. It's not based on individual behaviour. As João Lázaro said, it is a social and cultural issue which is linked to the patriarchal society. Johanna Nels also underlined the holistic approach of the convention. Often this is overlooked, particularly here in Portugal. In Portugal, as was already mentioned by Teresa Ferreira sitting next to me, we have made a lot of progress, but there's still a lot which needs to be done, and I've got many of the issues which we need to address. If I don't cover them all, I'll make sure that my presentation is made available to you. First of all, we have a semi-peripheral state. Very often legislation is no more than rhetoric. In particular, in the area of domestic violence and violence against women, we need true legislation and not just words. So what do we need to change in Portugal when it comes to violence against women? I'm not going to be absolutely exhaustive in my list, but I'd just like to refer to certain situations. Despite the progress that we have been made, in recent years, we have seen regression instead of progress. Instead of improving the definition of the crime of domestic violence, and we have characterised these crimes as violence against the physical integrity of a person, we continue to focus on the victim. Not on the victim, but on the behaviour. And also, in courts, we see that very often the proceedings are delayed, and often that is caused by certain people within the system. And what we also see is that coercive measures are not being implemented enough, as Mónica Gomes said in the earlier panel. And the rule is, in Portugal, that it's the victim which has to leave the family home. This is a very poor social message. It's not the perpetrator who is being punished, it's the victim who is being punished. And in fact, crime pays, because the perpetrator remains in his home, he carries on with his life and his job. The victim loses everything. Our studies in my association shows that when female victims of violence have started proceedings, they want to try and put an end to the violence. They don't want to put an end to their living in their family home. They often end up losing their homes and their assets. This is even the case where the house belonged to them before they married. They're forced out of the family home. So it's absolutely vital that women not be transferred to shelter before proper assessment is carried out. We need these counselling centres. Very often shelters are seen as the panacea for all problems. I don't want to say they're not absolutely vital, these shelters. They are absolutely crucial. We've been out on the streets campaigning for shelters for the victims of domestic violence, but it doesn't mean to say that the panacea for all situations of domestic violence is to send women and children to these shelters. The victim status foreseen Article 14 of Act 112 of 2009 is not being applied. Expectations were raised, but they're not being followed up. Also, the right to information, Article 15, is not being implemented. The right to protection in Article 20 is not implemented in a uniform fashion. There are differences from one county to the next. I don't want to repeat what Teresa Ferreira has already said, but we still insist on allowing contact between the victim and the supposed perpetrator. There are even some institutions that believe that this is an innovative working method, but they ignore the fact that this was a strategy which was adopted in the 1950s and 1960s and has since been shown to be very harmful to the victims. And what about the recovery of assets? There's no evidence to show that this is possible for the victims. Also, because of the austerity measures, social support is being withdrawn from victims, but even though we're women, we can't live just on the air we breathe. We know that patriarchal society dictates that suffering is acceptable for women, but that's not true. There's another fundamental issue which concerns property rentals. They are far too expensive for honest people. Almost sniggering about this. We can't cry over it. We have to attack this issue with strength and with courage. Furthermore, we've seen that income support has been cut. We know that even though these cases are supposed to be treated as a priority, they're supposed to be fast-tracked, that doesn't happen. And what about health system charges? according to the law, they should be exempted, but it doesn't happen uniformly. It's also difficult to access education institutes, especially once compulsory schooling has been completed. There is a lack of coordination between criminal and family courts. I'm not going to repeat exactly what the previous speaker said, but we know that there is a terrible lack of coordination when it comes to parental rights. In Portugal, children are often seen as to be the property of the parents, not just the mothers, but the parents. So we are perpetuating a patriarchal culture in which the father owns the children and his spouse. We know that prevention is arbitrary because it depends on the funds available. So, having mentioned domestic violence, I'd now like to turn my attentions to sexual harassment. It's not defined as a crime in Portugal. It is mentioned in the Labour Code. I'm running out of time and I'm trying to speed up and summarise. So, there is no protection for victims of sexual harassment. Even when there was a collective complaint by female employees of Securitas Direct against their employers in 2006. This was not followed up, so they are at the complete mercy of the directors of a company. When it comes to other public areas, we know that the victims of sexual harassment can only turn to some residual articles in the Penal Code, 143, 163, sexual coercion, 164 on rape, and 170 on flashing. When it comes to rape, I haven't got words to describe this. If you look at Article 163 of the Criminal Code, you'll see through violence, serious threat, or after the victim has fallen unconscious or unconscious. So we see that masculine violence and sexual violence is being tolerated, and I can also refer you there to a ruling by the appeal court in Porto in 2011 which shows this. In Portugal, there's no systematic financial support for rape victims. There are no phone helplines. I think that associations like mine and APAV, the Victim Support Agency, take care of victims, but there's no systematic financial support for them. As far as girls are concerned, they're often victims of sexual abuse. In fact, they're the main victims of sexual abuse. They're not protected other than by the child protection committees, the CPCJs, but apart from certain NGOs which have a gender perspective, we see that gender blindness reigns supreme in the child protection committees. They don't realise what discrimination against girls means. When it comes to human trafficking, it's still something which isn't seen, it's not detected, it's hard to investigate, and the rule is that there are only court hearings for accomplices in trafficking proceedings. the victims are not protected. There is not enough coordination between victim support agencies and the Borders Immigration Police. Funding depends on projects. Once the project is over, the funding is lost. When it comes to FGM, we see that there's a lack of information in certain sectors, notably in the health and education sectors. Primary prevention of violence against women, and I'm not talking here about stalking and other forms of violence which are not even referred to in studies by the feminist movement in Portugal. I'd just like to refer to primary prevention, which is covered by the convention, but we will only be able to change the situation if we are able to change the patriarchal culture of Portugal. Otherwise, we'll be treating the symptoms rather than the illness. I now like to refer to the role of NGOs, and I here am going to try and blow my own trumpet or trombone. The speaker's not sure of the idiom used here in Lisbon, which is from another part of the country. The These NGOs haven't had their status regulated yet. We think that's incredible. They should be seen as an important voice on this matter. And I think it's also interesting to note that if you look at the Daphne funding, you'll see that they didn't cover any projects in Portugal. So Daphne didn't provide any funding to Portugal this year. I'd also like to refer to a recent study from Mala Hutton and Laurel Weldon. This is a comparative study which shows that the role of NGOs and the feminist movement, the activist movement, and the social movements is vital for interpreting the situation from the victim's point of view. This is how legislation must be interpreted, and this will trigger social change. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And now we're going to have a deep debate. I'm sure that this dialogue will be rather lively. So, could you put your names down to ask questions to the speakers?
Olá, muito.
Good morning to you all. I would like to greet Dr. Elsa Paes and Mr. Bottas. I am not part of the Commission of Equality. I came here as a physician and I've learned a lot this morning. After hearing the chairwoman of UMAL, Maria José Magalhães, I became rather concerned. I would like to ask her some questions. You talked about the time of austerity now in Portugal, and there has been important social cuts which have affected victims of violence. And the Secretary of State in this area has nevertheless said that the victims now are receiving more help. So I would like to ask your opinion about this. There has been an enhancement of help to the victims. More refuges are going to be created. So I would like to have some clarification on that. And also you mentioned the CPCJ. I joined one of these organizations in Cascais, And also you said that they are gender blind sometimes when there is discrimination. And I would like to have some explanation on this. And also it is important in my view when you say that there can be some distortion of reality, that one has to be clear to the various health institutions. The Minister of Health has already stated that they are not going to impose any fees or moderating fees in cases of violence when there are such situations, when they are charging people victims of violence, they are violating the law. So there shouldn't be any doubt about this issue. Thank you very much. Maybe there's another intervention. Some time ago I forgot to identify, my name is Marguerite Martins from the Association Women Against Violence. In fact, in our in the context of our organization, we have seen also that the services are incoherent in their attitude. Sometimes they know about the law, sometimes they don't know anything. So anyway, women who are victims of violence should not pay these moderating taxes or fees. We are not very well informed in this area. We should eliminate the word sensitization. We should now be more responsible, more accountable. Citizens pay years to pay tax and nothing changes. And there's no law who can change this culture of impunity in our society. And today we still have the same problem. Some people know the law, other people never heard about any law, and this is all optional. So in fact, we are before a challenge. Why does this happen? If we go to the communities, talk to the profession, the health profession, 99%, maybe it's only the police force who is more informed. Most of the people do not receive any guidance from their superiors to know what they should do in this area of violence against women. So they don't know really what to do, and they are not properly trained. So in Portugal, we are in situations of lack of equality. We don't have the same access to the services, the same access to information. Professions are not well informed, and this is really the most serious challenge for us. Now, what about the mechanisms of accountability? They do not exist. If we cannot make anybody accountable, what can we do as to sexual violence? If I talk about from the outlook of our association, Women Against Violence, we've been working on this issue for 20 years. We are trying to open the rape emergency center. We don't have any kind of structure in Portugal. We have tried to do so. It is not innovating. It is not a priority. And our suggestions are not accepted. They don't go through. As the minister was saying, we started 20 years ago to help survivors of rape, also victims of incest, victim of sexual violence. And now we have to become more specialized and more, and we have to create these specialized centers. It is a challenge, of course. Now, with the economic crisis, I don't know if they are going to be a priority or not, but the centers which exist throughout the countries by the Institute of Forensic Medicine. We asked to most of the victims, women, young people, children who are violated and abused, we asked them, we asked who is providing support in the country. 99% of these people do not benefit from any kind of support or help. And this is also going to affect domestic violence. We see that in the context of domestic violence, many grown-up women are survivors from this type of crime. When they come to our shelters, they have already been victims of sexual abuse, violation, trauma before. So it would be a good thing that once that we could have national integrated plans and also including these centers to help victims.
Bon dia, Luisa Carrillo.
Good morning. My name is Luisa Carrillo. I'm a non-executive councillor in the municipality of Huaynas from the Socialist Party. I would like to tell you that my experience as to the CPCJ of Huaynas is on the same line as what the professor has just said. People are really so unprepared that they cannot really do much for the victims. My experience is not really gratifying in this area. Thank you very much. I would like to draw your attention on some aspects of our legislations which need to be changed. Others are in accordance to the convention. Others were mentioned by Mrs. Magalhães. We could discuss its scope, but sexual harassment is, in fact, a crime in Portugal, according to the Article 64, 65, and also the legislation can be applicable. I would like to draw your attention on two aspects which will require transposition. As to the restriction orders or banning orders, they do not exist in the Portuguese constitution and they have to become compatible with our legislation and with the existing principles, and they will require our attention. There is also an obvious change which will have to be done, to change the nature of sexual crime which exists, which due to the convention will have to be transformed into public crimes. The proceedings will depend on the woman who is a victim. Today, the reporting depends on the will of the woman. And the idea is to protect the victim, not to subject the victim to public proceedings. Now, the crime will have to become public, and the victim will have to be more protected so that these proceedings, even against her will not entail any re-victimization. Thank you, Mr. Cardoso. We are chairman of the Union of Prosecutors. What was very interesting in my view was to talk about the important input which must be acknowledged to women associations, UMA, the associations of legal women, APAV, Association of Women Against Violence. I think that this long way that we have already done, and also all this work, all this battle. Now we're going to obtain a statute for victims and so forth. We have already obtained a lot, but we see that in practice there's not much progress, and we are disappointed. How can it? So many people are still killed. I remember of that case of domestic violence, which did not exist in the legislation. It was egoism was mentioned in the legislation, maliciousness and so forth. In 1974, well, there was, I made a sentence, and it was not accepted, and the case went to Évora and then to Almada. When I was in Almada, the judge, a colleague phoned me, said that my appeal had been done, but that meanwhile the woman, the victim, had been killed. In fact, homicides are frequent. I think that the fact that that the merit that we have some experience, that we have been always been through this, is acknowledged, that we've been battling to obtain results for 30 years. I think that this proposal from Maria José Magalhães should be a very important issue to be addressed by our MPs. As to this, the other proposal, these three interventions were very good. I'm very grateful to Elsa Paes for organizing this session, because in fact we've heard about the convention, but we're not familiar with its content, and now we feel obliged to read it. As to the proposal of the Portuguese Association of women lawyers and magistrates, I think that we should reflect on this. We daily hear about complaints of women who then say, well, I had better not having said anything, because now I run the risk of being without my children. Either people won't believe on what in my testimony, or they think that, you know, I don't want to live with my husband and my family. In fact, the situation of women in family courts is sometimes is dramatic. Sometimes we alert the public to the dangers of a law which is so permissive, which had an optimistic idea of life, where couples were always happy, and they parted because there was no longer love. It's not true. I mean, there's still a lot of domestic violence. In fact, divorce cannot be considered as judicial decision, which allows both parties to live their own life. But I think that we can draw some ideas from this session, and I think it will inspire our MPs to do something about these issues. There is unanimity about combating violence against women. We know that.
Bom dia.
Good morning, I'm called Jorge Cardoso. I'm here as an individual. When I looked at the manual, I saw reference to the fact that women are also considered in the convention, I should say, to be those who are under the age of 18. Often there's violence during or between boyfriend and girlfriend, and I think this is important to recognise. And also, in the convention, I see the stereotyped or sexist stereotypes. I noticed that Maria José Magalhães referred to feminist movements. I don't like that expression because, as a man, I feel as I'm being excluded. As a father, a child, or a partner, I feel as though I'm being excluded. I think that the expression feminist movement should be banned. Thank you.
I just wanted to draw attention to one fact of the Istanbul Convention that hasn't been mentioned here, but in fact is absolutely vital to some of the issues that's been raised in the discussion, and that is the issue of collection of data and evaluation. How many protection orders are available? I've just conducted research for the Institute of Gender Equality on availabilities of services across the European Union. It's been very, very difficult to get that information because many countries don't collect them. How are you going to be able to know if policies are working that are introduced in the Parliament if that level of research and data is not there? How are you going to know if the particular approaches to criminal sanctions are working? How are you going to know about perpetrators? I think it's vitally important to consider how to include the collection of data and providing resources for that adequate collection. And the last time I was here in Portugal was actually for a conference that Professor Manuel Lisboa did precisely on the collection of data, and I think that this is vitally important. We need to know what's working, what's not working, why it's working, why it's not working, and we need to learn across borders. And this is something that's addressed by the convention as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Passo então agora a palavra.
I'll give the floor to our panelists. Ricardo Leite, from the Parliamentary Health Committee, talking about financial support for victims, income support. We've seen it being cut. UMAR has offices in various parts of the country. We've seen that social benefits are cut, sometimes they're even withdrawn, denied, or it takes too long for them to start receiving the social benefit. This is because the social security employees don't award them the social benefit quickly enough. And this is something which is common throughout the country and in the islands as well. What's true is that the Minister for Equality and Parliamentary Affairs took a very praiseworthy measure to increase social benefits. The budget was increased by 500,000 euros. That's the budget for NGOs which provide victim support. And they, according to the rules in place, will distribute these funds to victims and victims' children. But what I'm talking about in particular is the regular income which is paid to female victims of violence. It's something which is foreseen in Law 112 of 2009. Unfortunately, we don't know if there are instructions in Social Security to the following end, but what we see in the field is that social benefits to women are being cut and it's taking them too long to be awarded these social benefits. Nevertheless, this measure was taken by the Minister and we would like to congratulate the Minister on that. As for the Child Protection Committees, the so-called CPCJs, as well as the education system, some of the participants here have already referred to these entities. There are a few points that I'd like to make. First of all, very often the context is forgotten, notably when children are at risk of violence or are the direct victims of violence. But what happens is that it's the mothers that are being threatened, who are being blackmailed, they're the ones who are called to the Child Protection Committees. So children are used as property of the patriarch in the patriarchal system. So what happens in the state structures, notably in the Child Protection Committees, as Luisa Carrillo correctly pointed out, these children are used as a way of threatening women. If women don't leave home, if they don't end the relationship, then there will be consequences. We know that there is a time cycle in these processes. There's a chronological and a synchronic cycle. We know that the forms of violence change, and thus the victim will change during the cycle. So what we see is that some women or young girls feel that it's not the right time for them to leave the home, for their own reasons. It's the way that they have of organising their lives, their own perspectives. And so the Child Protection Committees replace the women in the decision-making process, because the Child Protection Committee said was either you leave home or you lose custody of the children. So what happens to the children? The woman goes to a shelter, and then the children go to a children's home. They've never had a father, and now they're left without a mother either. So we need to invest in counselling centres. Women must be counselled. They must be helped to reflect on their situation. They must take the decision themselves to fulfil their citizenship rights. When are they going to leave that man? They may love the perpetrator, despite everything. Also, we emphasise the role of women in parental rights. The Child Protection Committee forgets there are fathers. When it comes to duties, it's the mother. When there are rights, it's the father. The father never appears before the Child Protection Committee, and so the blame is laid at the door of the women when it comes to child negligence, for example. Often, women go to the health sector when they're victims of violence. They get psychological counselling, and then the psychologist prescribes medication. As I'm being filmed, as I'm on TV, I'm not going to talk frankly. There is medication for a certain purpose, and I'm not going to say what this is exactly, but I think it's a four-letter word. And so, because the woman is taking medication, the Child Protection Committee feels that she's doubly weak. She's a victim of violence, and she's being drugged. There are specialised entities, and there are experts who know about violence. And I normally give you an example that if there's someone who's got heart trouble, they don't go to the dentist for help. If you've got heart trouble, you don't go to the hairdressers I know women feel good if they have their hair done, but you send someone with heart trouble to a cardiologist. But what happens is that those people who are the first ones to counsel women do not send them to the appropriate experts. And when it comes to hospital fees, you're quite right, it's not legal, but it happens. So, we need to keep a close eye on what's happening. What Margarida Martins was saying is absolutely vital. Awareness is over. In fact, I think it should be removed from all the plans, because awareness was part of the past. What we need now is prevention, and primary prevention means education. It means systematic education. It means change mentalities. It means change the culture, change the rules, the standards, what we think as professionals, practitioners, members of the parliament, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to repeat what Teresa Ferrier said about the language, about making sure that female gender words are included. But when it comes to sexual harassment, I think that Teresa Ferrier will be here to respond to what Rui Cardoso was saying earlier. Well, even though no questions were directly addressed to me, there are two or three points which I would like to address, and I'll start with the last one. And once again, I'm going to disagree with Mr. Cardoso, because sexual harassment needs to be defined as a crime. I believe that the current provisions of the Criminal Code do not cover the convention's requirements. There are certain things which must be removed from our law. The current way in which we define the crime of women not meeting certain rules in parental rights decisions. It's normally women who are getting the blame for this. We have to remember that sometimes alimony is not being paid to children. We also have to change social security rules, labour rules concerning parental leave. And there's another thing which needs to be changed. There's a huge amount of confusion in the Portuguese legislation concerning coercive measures against perpetrators and protective measures for the victim. I think that nowadays we all have a certain reluctance about talking about implementation of safety measures. Also, in the law of inheritance and wills, we have seen recent events which show that changes are needed there. So there is a whole panoply of legal issues which need to be reviewed. It's not just law in books, but law in action. The point raised by Maria José Magalhães is one of them, notably when it comes to the courts, the cuts triggered by austerity, but also the institute which governs legal aid and how it is provided. This needs to be reviewed when it comes to crimes committed in accordance with Article 162, but also we need to review the latest law from 2011. There are incongruences there. Act 112 of 2009, this refers to women who are victims of crimes foreseen under Article 152 of the Criminal Code. So, if I was a victim of domestic violence, were the victim of attempted murder, I cannot enjoy the benefits foreseen for victims of domestic violence, because attempted murder is not the crime foreseen Article 152 of the Criminal Code. So we must have a critical analysis of the whole legal framework here in Portugal in order to adapt it to the central scope of this convention. I think that what is most pertinent about this convention is the fact that its ratification by the Portuguese Parliament will convey that there is a commitment by political parties to the matters at stake. It will show that there is political consensus in pursuing the aims of the Istanbul Convention. It would mean that all the political parties represented here in the Portuguese Parliament are bound to the same objectives, to the same goals concerning the elimination of all forms of violence against women. With that as our foundation, we will be able to review and change everything that needs to be changed.
Some final remarks. Now to tell the audience that the common heritage of defense of the rights existing in the civil society as to the different concepts. This is why the Portuguese civil society has so much vitality. In fact, this area has been placed on the social political agenda by civil society. A few remarks now. Now, the question of harassment. I agree with what Dr. Fair said. I would say that which charges of accusation in the exist under the quoted article in the Constitution, in the penal code. There is also the possibility of restricting order or barring orders as measures of protection. It would be important to so that the perpetrators can be taken away from the victim in order to protect the victim. The other day I received a mail from a lady who signed as director of services in the plural, because the you are director of services and not of a service. This is quite quaint. Now, the question of the change of our legislation deserves another conference. We have to update our legislation, organize the coordination between the various producers of statistics. This would be the topic for another conference. Another concern is to establish a consistent legal framework, an efficient framework which can always be updated, but not to have several sources and several legal frameworks which make it extremely difficult to enforce the law. Professor Marie-José talked about blowing her whistle. I want also to blow my whistle. In fact, but in a more integrated vision of the statute of the victim of crime. Some concepts are basic to all victims of crime. A victim of rape is not entitled to be exempted from moderating tax, but the victim of domestic violence is exempted from this tax. Some people are more victims than others, but this is due to the peculiarities of each type of victims. Some victims are particularly vulnerable. It depends on the context of their personal background and also on the type of crime. I think that Professor Maria José Magalhães would like to make a few remarks. I would like to appreciate to have been asked a question by the feminist woman. It has always been a secular movement formed by men and women. When the Republic was established, we had Antonio Comas, Ana Castro Osório, Beatriz de Castro. It has always been a mixed movement with men and women who has also fought for equal rights for men and women and fought against racism and slavery and also against discrimination or gender based on sexual orientation. It has always supported homosexuals and lesbians. And also it has fought, first feminists fought for civil rights and liberties, and sometimes they also have been active in many battles. Thank you for referring to the feminist movement. And long live the feminists. Thank you very much. Thank you. This is the end of the panel. I would like to thank the speakers. I would like to thank everybody who participated in the debate. It has been a good analysis of the issues at stake. I think that it is very clear that the culture of tolerance of violence is at stake, and that because of these stereotypes which contribute to the inferiorization of women, we have to build a new culture in the judiciary, and also we have to give more support to the victims. On behalf of the organization, I would like to tell you that we'll resume our work at 3:00.